Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. My guest today describes his book as a spiritual survival guide for how to stay sane and thrive in these confusing times. And I should say that his book was actually written pre-COVID-19 days, so times now, of course, are even more confusing than ever. Bob Hillary is my guest. He's a folk singer and songwriter, an author, earth protector, and permaculturist. He's a passionate advocate of the Live Simply movement spreading around the globe. He's a keen practitioner of yoga, meditation, and living naturally. Today, we discuss his theory on slow living, whole living, living from the heart, and how we can use these times of COVID quarantine as a time to look inward and to build community. His new book is called Simplify, How to Stay Sane in a World Going Mad. And here's my guest, Bob Hillary. Bob Hillary, welcome to the show. I don't know about a world going mad, Bob. I think it's already gone mad.
I think it went mad. Hands up, anyone who doesn't think it's gone mad.
Yeah, I don't see. Yep. I won't see too many hands there, I don't think. But we're talking about your book, of course, Simplify, How to Stay Sane in a World Going Mad. And I don't know, it just seems to get crazier by the minute. What's the general spirit of people like in Britain right now? Because you're joining us from Britain. And you guys have had a very strict stay-at-home policy there.
Yeah, we've had it pretty strict. I'm really lucky because I live kind of semi off-grid, half off-grid in the countryside. So, and actually, you know, I'm not buying it all anyway, but let's not, maybe not go into that quite yet. But I mean, if I lived in a city right now, it would be super intense. I mean, literally people are not allowed to, it's full on.
Yeah.
I'm personally having quite a good time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm also feeling very deeply what's going on, and that's not easy. And yeah, not having a totally good time, but I'm enjoying not working.
Well, I read something yesterday, and it was so true that everybody is experiencing this at different levels. Because of course, some people are on the treadmill, 24/7 it seems, and they're glad to take a little respite with loved ones at home. Others, have no income, and so of course that's a huge stressor. And others, of course, are dealing with sick family members or dealing with COVID themselves. I mean, we're all dealing with this on very different levels and trying to do the best, but just got to keep moving forward. So, we haven't talked before, Bob, and I always like to introduce our guests a little to our audience here. And you have an interesting background because you did live in a busy city at one time. You said you spent 10 years working the 9-to-5 lifestyle. You also fronted a band, The Roughness, and you suddenly started experiencing serious illness that really forced you to change your lifestyle. So what was the turning point for you? What was the deciding factor?
I was 27 years old in my absolute super young prime, and I was running this amazing kind of funk reggae band, and we were signed by a US label, and we were just rocking it. And I was really in love. I was in a beautiful relationship, and I was careening around the world playing sold out gigs to like groovy audiences and having really flying pretty high actually. And then suddenly I just went down. I got something called ME, which I'm sure people know about. It's called chronic fatigue, and I was, I couldn't move. I was down for 2 years, 27 to 29.
Wow.
And literally I got forced to change my lifestyle, and I was burning the candle, actually, really hard, as rock and roll musicians do.
Right.
I was having a wild time, and yeah, it got knocked away, and I at that time, from that point onwards, I got into, you know, healing and sustainability and permaculture and organic living and slow living, and I just, I was not like I was super in the alternative, the mainstream world, but I completely was forced to exit anything even vaguely mainstream, and the alternative world opened up for me really, really powerfully, which was incredible. And now I'm completely living it, and I'm preaching it, you know.
Right, right. You're writing music. You're singing songs about it. Writing books about it. So you're really, really immersed in that. At some point, you literally gave away most of your possessions and moved to Wales. I read on a mountain. And grew your own food with your wife, and were really quite self-sustaining. So what was your takeaway? You lived there for how long? What was it, a couple of years?
Yeah, well, we lived there full-time, fully off the grid for like 2.5 years, but we were the journey of being on the land was about six years, and actually we still have it, and yeah, but the journey of literally upping and moving and selling, giving away my possessions and moving off grid was a 2.5 year journey, and it was the foundation of my book basically, and I'm happy to talk about it. It was a completely epic journey. I learned a lot.
Well, I read that you said that you just, it was incredibly illuminating to you. So what would you say was like the biggest takeaway that you took from that experience? Because it, obviously very life-changing for anybody who would do that.
I would say the big one was this. I effectively like moved out of society. And so what I saw and what I find myself in a position to help people with is that I stepped out of society completely, and what I saw was like how our society operates from outside it, and basically I saw what's going on in the bigger picture of what we're all living in, and I think that people can't see what they're living in when they're living in it, if this makes sense, but yeah. When you actually step outside it and you cut all the ties, you actually see what's going on. And I saw everything, and actually it was very challenging to see what I saw. But now, yeah.
So let's break that down a little bit. Let's get specific here. So in particular, when you look back, you know, what was it, what was the one thing in particular that you really didn't like?
Okay. I tell you the biggest thing, and there were many, the biggest thing was the technology.
Yeah.
I saw that basically we're living in a techno trap. Don't want to get conspiracy theory on you, but I saw very clearly that we are living in a techno trap, and that means essentially that we're living under a blanket of Wi-Fi en masse. Our towns and cities are literally they're energetically locked down with Wi-Fi, which means that most people living in those places, they have to resonate at that same frequency. So that's why everyone's addicted to smartphones and laptops and everything. It's because they're actually living under an electromagnetic Wi-Fi blanket, and they don't know it, which is kind of scary. And so I'm actually on a mission to help people see that and help people to unhook. And because I've unhooked, my journey of moving off the grid was because I was also addicted to technology before I moved off grid.
Yeah, it's
now
very,
I'm
very
not, you know.
Yeah, it's very easy to get addicted because, as you said, you know, we get this release of dopamine every time we get a like on social media or a ping or a notification comes through. Actually, it kind of irritates me, but I think I'm one of the exceptions. You know, if those pings, I take them off all of my technology because I can't stand them. But they are addictive, and in this time when we're trying to keep up with what's happening with COVID-19, I found myself turning to Twitter feeds all the time, and I'm like, you have to stop this.
Oh God, I haven't gone anywhere near Twitter.
Well,
Facebook's my limit.
You know, I know when I've come back, I've talked with many people over the years who've like worked out, you know, with Jane Goodall in the forests and the chimpanzees, and they come back to the world. They may be photographers or videographers, and they come back to the world, the reality as we call it, and they're in shock because they've been out there for, you know, 6-9 months, whatever. And I know when I've just had a few days away camping, I come back and I can't stand the television on. I can't stand, you know, noise around me. So I would imagine when you've done this for a while, it's very hard to actually, you know, walk into a city and try and interact in the city.
I'm kind of in and out. I mean, it's funny, my book's been picked up by a publishing, really cool publishing company in London. So I go in for, you know, the odd meeting, but they're getting me little, you know, talking events in places, and I zip in and I'm straight back out again. I'm undercover, you know. I'm in and out. I do my bit, and then I'm out again.
There you go. So the book is called Simplify, and you say that your remedy for over complex times is to simplify, and obviously this is where all this is coming from. But you're not talking about becoming a mountain hermit. You're talking about living in tune with Earth. So I'd like to dive into the book and take a look at some of the concepts in here. It's a great little book. I mean, it's a tiny book, but it's got some really great advice in there, I think, and things that are worth putting into practice. So appreciate talking with you today. We just touched on technology, Bob, and it's what I have a love-hate relationship. I need it for work, but you know, I'm grateful for it in these times when my family's overseas and I'm here, I can talk to them. But you know, there are times when you just have to get away from it. And I know many people say the same thing, but talking about it and actually doing it are two different things. And some people don't know where to begin to simplify their lives. Where do they begin? What do you? I know you talk to people about this. Where do they begin?
I would say this in this time. I would say this, and I would say this to parents, or any parents who are listening. You know, I get really upset when I see kids addicted to phones, because I'm like an empath, so I really feel things. It's kind of the way I tick, which is why I wrote this book, because I care. You know, I care about our race, and I care when I see all our teenagers and kids addicted to phones on the trains, and it's like, this is not okay. I have to do my bit to try and help the situation. So I would say this, it's all about healthy boundaries. So what I did was that I just basically, well, my story was actually I lost my phone when I was living in the mountains, and then because there's no flipping, you know, mobile phone shops in the mountains.
Right.
Buy another one.
Right.
So I went, you know, I had a week initially, I couldn't buy a phone. And then in that week, I started basically observing that, okay, I'm starting to feel really different, really fast. I feel happier, clearer headed, healthier, less kind of weighed down. And then I made the correlation between how I was feeling before, so like heavy and foggy and anxious, I made that direct correlation with my phone, and I saw that having no phone for just a week, I was starting to feel really, really great. And so I continued to not have a phone, and it lasted 2 years. I didn't have a phone for 2 years. I mean, I had a laptop, but I didn't have a phone, and I've only just got one.
Mm.
Which is pretty cool as somebody who's, you know, I'm an author and a musician, and I'm a busy guy, you know.
Right.
So
right.
I would say this to anyone listening: it's really about making some healthy boundaries. I would say this: try turning off your phone for a day. So maybe, you know, take a day on the weekend and just turn the flipping thing off. Turn it off. Leave it off, and then see how you feel, you know. And then maybe try it for a weekend. You know, try it for 2 days. And just, it's really about observing how you feel. And then you might start feeling like being like, maybe I should try 3 or 4 days. And then this is why digital detoxes are so popular right now, because people are like, hell, I want a whole week without this goddamn thing, you know?
Right.
And people are, then they're like, oh my God, I feel so good without it.
Right.
You know, so, and actually I'm not saying that it's all bad, because it's not all bad, it's half-half, like everything in life, but, you know, there's no doubt that it's getting, you know, it's not a great situation, so we need to do something about it. So, and you know, with our kids, we have to be responsible adults. We have to, you know, teach them and show them, like, if we're addicted, then of course they're going to get addicted, and then what have we got? We've got a very messy state of things in our society. So we've got to do something. You know, got to act. You know.
Yeah.
So it's really about experimenting.
Yes.
Finding ways.
Absolutely.
Being a brave, being a, you know, a forerunner, being a pioneer, being like, right, I'm gonna use my phone, you know, for so many hours a day, and then it's off, you know.
Yeah. The one thing I really hate to see when I go out for brunch or something or dinner is to see whole families sitting there not communicating. They're all on their individual phones. I think that's really sad. You know, I know you've not had a television for years, and I remember when we were kids, my dad got ticked off one day when he came home from work, and we all ignored him because we're laying around the television just, you know, goggle-eyed. And he's like, right, said to my mom, we're getting rid of that thing tomorrow. And then they did. They got rid of the TV, and for the next couple of years, we didn't have one. And it was the best time ever, because we played games together as a family. And, you know, it was just a whole different experience that we forget. You know, maybe some people are doing that now, now they're being in quarantine.
I hope so. Yeah, well, you know, it's really about finding, you know, what do you want? Do you want to be addicted to a screen, or do you not? You know, a lot of people are waking up right now and going, actually, I really don't want to be like this. I don't want to live like this. And people are starting to, like, wake up and just go, no, actually, no.
Right, right.
Really positive. So more of that, please, people.
Yes, absolutely. And I do think, you know, technology is a tool for us. We shouldn't be the tool for it. No, we're not supposed to be a slave to it. I want to talk about the essence of simple living. I mean, we're kind of touching on it here, but you talk about slow living, and that means it's slow, sustainable, local, organic, whole. What do you mean by whole, for a start?
Whole. Let me go with this. I would say right now, I'm going to link this in with this current corona situation, because there's a link here. I feel like right now, the corona situation is, because we all have been forced to slow down, many of us are being forced to look more within, because we have a lot of time suddenly, and you know, I feel like people are, initially there was a real kind of a big sigh of relief as people were like, oh my God, I don't have to go to work. People are, I've got time, I can rest.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I don't know what it's like over there in the States, but in England I feel at the moment like people are, they've had a bit of rest, and they've taken a big sigh of relief. But right now, they're starting to feel what's there inside them. Because when you've got a lot of time on your hands, you have to feel. And when you have to feel, you feel what's within. And a lot of us have, you know, we have unresolved stuff. We have traumas from our childhood. We have stuff that we're not comfortable with inside us. And so where I'm going with this is, I feel like, because I'm really into healing, and this book is really about healing, mm-hmm. and I feel like this is a time on planet Earth right now where everything is being called to heal and to restore. And so in terms of becoming whole, this is something I'm working on all the time, daily, for myself. I'm working with my own healing. I'm, you know, I'm digging out the stuff that's making me unhappy. I'm seeing a healer. I'm doing healing work, healing others, and I'm becoming whole. And as I become whole and happier and more content with myself, I become more powerful and more empowered, and therefore I'm able to impact the world authentically and give. And I feel like we've been living in a society that only really knows how to take, which is why the world is such a mess. Because it's full of 7 billion humans just taking. And that's got to change if we're going to carry on as a race.
Right.
I believe that it's time that we start to learn how to give. And that involves changing what's within, changing patterns, changing. This is a time of really big change. I know you're all feeling it. Cause,
yeah.
Wow, it's really powerful. And it's not about to get any less powerful. We're having change forced upon us, and it's getting really strong. And
right.
Time to prepare ourselves for more of that, in fact.
Yeah. Well, I want to, that's a good, I was going to ask you this later in our conversation, but this is a good segue into this particular topic, because in part three of the book, it's broken down into parts. Part three of the book, you talk about being who we really are. And what you just said resonates, I think, because I've seen so many people saying they don't know what to do with themselves and they're bored, which to me says they don't really understand themselves and their interests and what they value, and others are anxious because they don't like the feelings that are coming up.
Yeah, for sure.
And one of the things you discuss in part three about being who we really are is being gentle, and you say, you know, gentleness is a underrated quality. We have to be gentle with ourselves before we can be gentle with anyone else. So just talk a little about that, if you would.
For me right now, it's really about coming back to the heart and loving myself. And this is a time, people, where we're being given a beautiful opportunity to start to love ourselves. And, you know, finally, for the first time ever, we all have time.
Yeah.
And so let's use this time to work on ourselves, to become self-loving, to use the time to just rest and change old patterns that say you have to work all the time for the man. You know, that's changing, because it's not working for the planet. It's just not working. And so what can come in place of those old, you know, work, take patterns is, you know, come back to the heart, open yourself to your own love. I mean, this is not an easy thing to do, but it's nonetheless something I think we're being called to do right now. I'm really working with this myself of catching the sort of workaholic in me and being like, actually, I really don't want to do that anymore. It's not working for me. It's killing me. And so I'm spending time lying in my hammock in my garden and listening to really gentle music. I've just been working with my heart. Sometimes every day I'm putting my hand on my heart and just almost sort of like soothing myself, going, it's okay, you know, you're okay. Like just learning to receive through the heart. That's personally where I'm at.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And, you know, those feelings that come up, they are going to be uncomfortable, but we have to face them to get through that to the other side, I think. And one of the things you talk about is spiritual protection. So what does spirituality mean to you, and what do you mean by spiritual protection? In a nutshell, come on.
Okay, let's have a go. I would say when I got knocked off my rock and roll lifestyle path at 27, that was my spiritual awakening. And I'm now 42, so that was quite a while ago. I would say I've been having a spiritual awakening for like 15 years. And what does that mean? That means that I've opened up to the idea or the awareness that there is something bigger than us calling the shots, and it's really hard to put into words. I don't like saying the word God, because that kind of implies Christianity, and I'm not a Christian. I believe in a great creator.
Right.
And I believe that the more I work, the more that I keep opening to life and spirituality, the more that I trust in life. And I use practices like meditation and yoga to help me to open up to that. And as far as I'm aware right now, we're all kind of on the verge of having a massive spiritual awakening, which might sound a bit hippy-dippy, but in fact, it's the most awesome thing ever, because it means that the planet, this planet, this race is about to wake up. We've been kind of asleep for a long time, and which is why the world's in a mess.
Yeah, we've been centered massive,
you know,
massive.
Yeah, and now we're waking up, and that is not an easy process, but it's an amazing one, and it means that we walk away from ways of being that aren't serving us and aren't serving the planet, and we step towards more sustainable, more aware ways of acting and being with ourselves, and so we're not damaging ourselves, and so we're not damaging the planet. And when we all start to do that, it's going to be amazing. Imagine 7 billion people all like acting aware and consciously, and treating each other kindly rather than with hatred and fear. That gives me complete goosebumps. Actually, I've just got goosebumps all down my spine right now. I really believe that this is what we're on the verge of as a race, which is the most incredible, incredible, epic, exciting thing.
Yes.
Ever.
Yes. And so when you're talking of spiritual protection, you say that we need to, I'm just reading from the book here, we all need to learn to keep ourselves clear, energetically speaking. We need to protect ourselves from negativity and keep our energies high, which is a little hard to do right now. It takes work, but that work is worth it. And you talk in the book about warrior practice. You say, be a warrior, not a worrier. Let stillness be our friend. What do you mean by warrior practice?
Well, the book's full of warrior practices. So every chapter has a warrior practice, which is kind of like spiritual homework. So I'm basically asking people, inviting people to do some practices from the book. They're very easy. But regarding being a warrior, I think that things are getting tough on planet Earth, and we're being forced to wake up, and we're being forced to change old ways that aren't serving the planet. And in order to get through these times, and these are not going to be necessarily very easy times these next years, because everything's changing. Our whole society is changing, and so we're going to have to go with that. We're going to have to navigate that, which is not going to be easy. And so, for all that it's exciting, it's also going to be challenging. And we all like a good challenge. Huh? But regarding becoming a warrior, I think that we, in these times, we're going to need to become a bit warrior-like in order to get through. And when I say warrior, I don't mean like a big, you know, spear-carrying, you know, dude.
No, it comes from within, I think, right? It comes
like
from
an
within.
Earth warrior. We're going to have to become eco-warriors. We're going to have to become more aware of what we're doing with our lives. And we're going to have to stand up if things get difficult, and act responsibly and act kindly. And you know, if our governments are making some really bad decisions and calling some wrong shots, then I really think we're going to have to stand up as a people and go, no, that's not okay. That's what I mean by a warrior. And I know I've got a big warrior inside me, and I meet a lot of people these days. Most people I meet, I'm like, I see a growing warrior in them that's like, we want to do the right thing here. And people are increasingly unhappy with the way the world's being governed. And again, that's going to have to change. And so we might have to just stand up and become a little bit more warrior-like, where we exert our rights.
Right.
I mean.
Right. And, you know, none of us know what's going to happen, you know, after this pandemic dies down. You know, we have no clue. We're going back to a new reality, really. So I think everything you've said here is moving us towards to choosing our own way of being when we do go back, when that new reality comes in, and shaping our own future, you know, instead of just going along with the status quo so much. I know so many people who've started their own vegetable gardens, and you talk about that in the book, about soul gardening, and how important that is to you.
I'm really happy you mentioned that. I'm also... Everyone, I'm mad into gardening. I grew up on a farm, and I'm really into like growing my own food, and I grow my own food here. But I'm also, when I tried to buy my seeds this year, everywhere online, everywhere sold out. Also, a really good sign, because people are empowering themselves. They're sensing the situation, the seriousness of this situation, and they're like, well, they've also got time. They're like, what do we want to do with our time? Garden, grow our own food. I don't know what's... Something's going on, but I think some of us have been feeling this situation coming for a few years now, and people are, like, preparing. You know, I mean, I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen, but, yeah, heck, if we're growing our own food, then we're going to be okay. You know?
Yeah, we're a step ahead of the game there, as they say. Yeah,
it's a very empowering thing to do. It's also a very I find it a very you know, a lot of us are struggling with anxiety in this time, and I find gardening is just the most amazing way to plug out of anxiety into peace. And you know, I never really answered your question about spiritual protection, but I have some suspicions around what's going on with the Wi-Fi, and I feel it kind of messing with us a bit and manipulating us and making us very anxious somehow. And I find that the best remedy for that is to just get my hands in the soil. And I actually kid you not, like, it takes about 5 seconds for me to go from an anxious state to a peaceful state.
Yeah.
If I just put my hands in the soil and plant something, I'm like, I can change my state so quickly. It's really amazing, actually.
Yeah, it's very nurturing. It's very nurturing because you're nurturing the plants. You want them to grow and be healthy. And you're nurturing your body with good food that you know hasn't been riddled with pesticides. And it's fresh and seasonal. And it's also a creative outlet, too.
Yeah.
So, well, it's been great talking with you, Bob.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, our conversation went in a whole different direction than I'd planned, but I'm really happy about it. So I want to end our conversation with the same way you end the book, with a quote by Mary Oliver, poet Mary Oliver, and she says, "What will you do with your one wild and precious life?" Tell us what's next for you and what you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
Okay, what's next for me? Everything's so uncertain right now. I'll tell you what's next for me is community. When this lockdown lifts, I am going to get so... And I already am. I'm creating a massive sustainable vegetable garden for the village where I live, which is already underway. Even in the lockdown, we're getting on with it. I feel like... And I'll leave your listeners with this. Thank you for listening, by the way. I think that we need to get more reliant on local rather than... I think we need to... need to start getting to know the people that live around us, and we need to start trusting, getting to know people and trusting people again, because I think that we're moving into a time where there's going to be some chaos. I mean, it's already here, people. We're kind of living in a chaotic time. I think it's going to increase for a couple of years. It's not going to go away, and we don't know what's going to happen, and I'm not putting you into fear here, but I just think it's a good time to be surrounding yourself with people that you love and that you trust.
Right.
And if you guys can, you know, get growing food together and share that between you, and, you know, have the kids getting involved and creating community, doing events and keeping stuff local, so that if things do go really haywire, you know, and let's hope they don't, then at least you're surrounded with something that makes sense. At least that you're surrounded with love, because the other, if that doesn't happen, people will go into fear. And when people go into fear, then they don't act so well. And so if you can move towards living a life that is surrounded with love, that's going to be a nice grounding, supporting, nurturing thing in these times, where you can just have that around you. And when people are acting from a place of love, they generally act for the greater good. And
absolutely,
who do we want to have around us in these times?
Right, love and abundance. Awesome. Beautiful. I love it, Bob. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
Thanks for being with us today.
Real pleasure.
I want to let listeners know again, the book is called Simplify: How to Stay Sane in a World Going Mad. And you can find out much more about Bob Hillary at his website, bobhillary.com. If you have questions, comments, or feedback on today's show, you can find me at our website, conversationslive.net. And you can find more than 700 podcasts, more than 1,200 guest interviews there too, conversationslive.net. We'll be back next week. Until then, stay safe, stay strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.